Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 8, Side 2. Two groups of stormtroopers disappeared into the fighters, while the rest walked around the edge of the newly created clearing, probing with eyes and portable sensors into the forest. After a few minutes, those inside the fighters emerged, and what seemed to be a short meeting was held between them at the base of the shuttle ramp. At an inaudible command, the outer ring of searchers came back in to join them, and the whole crowd trooped into their ship. The ramp sealed, and the shuttle disappeared once more into the sky, leaving nothing but the hum of its repulsor lifts behind. A minute later, even that was gone. Luke got his hands under him, started to get up. Well, he broke off at another jab of the blaster.
Quiet, Mara muttered. They'll have left a sensor behind, just in case someone comes back.
Luke frowned. How do you know?
Because that's standard stormtrooper procedure in a case like this, she growled. Real quiet now. We get up and grab some more distance, and keep the droid quiet, too.
They were completely out of sight of the wrecked fighters, and probably another 50 meters past that, before she called a halt.
What now? Luke asked.
We sit down, she told him.
Luke nodded and eased to the ground. Thank you for not turning me into the stormtroopers.
Save it, she said shortly, sitting down carefully herself and laying her blaster on the ground beside her. Don't worry. There wasn't anything altruistic about it. The incoming shuttles must have seen us and sent a group over to investigate. Carda's going to have to spin them some sort of sugar story about what happened, and I can't just walk into their arms until I know what that story is.
She set the small flat box on her lap and opened it. You could call him, Luke reminded her.
I could also call the Imperials directly and save myself some time, she retorted. Unless you don't think they've got the equipment to monitor anything I send. Now, shut up. I've got work to do.
For a few minutes, she worked at the flat box in silence, fiddling with a tiny keyboard and frowning at something Luke couldn't see from his angle. At irregular intervals, she looked up, apparently to make sure he wasn't trying anything. Luke waited, and abruptly she grunted in satisfaction.
3 days, she said aloud, closing the box.
3 days to what? Luke asked.
The edge of the forest, she told him, gazing at him with unblinking eyes. Civilization. Well, Hilliard City, anyway, which is about as close as this part of the planet gets to it.
And how many of us will be going there? Luke asked quietly.
That's the question, isn't it? She agreed, her tone icy. Can you give me any reason why I should bother taking you along?
Sure. Luke inclined his head to the side. R2.
Don't be absurd.
Her eyes flicked to the droid, back at Luke.
Whatever happens, the droid stays here, in pieces.
Luke stared at her.
In pieces? What? You need it spelled out, she retorted. The droid knows too much. We can't leave it here for the stormtroopers to find.
Knows too much about what?
You, of course. You, Carda, me, this whole stupid mess.
R2 moaned softly. He won't tell them anything, Luke insisted.
Not after it's in pieces, no, Mara agreed.
With an effort, Luke forced himself to calm down. Logic, not fervor, was the only way to change her mind.
We need him, he told her. You told me yourself the forest was dangerous. R2 has sensors that can spot predators before they get close enough to strike.
Maybe, maybe not, she countered. The vegetation here limits sensor ranges down to practically zero.
It'll still be better than you or I could do, Luke said. And he'll also be able to watch while we're sleeping. She raised her eyebrows slightly.
We?
We, Luke said. I don't think he'll be willing to protect you unless I'm along. Mara shook her head.
No good, she said, picking up her blaster. I can get along without him, and I certainly don't need you.
Luke felt his throat tighten. Are you sure you're not letting your emotions get in the way of your judgment? He asked. He hadn't thought her eyes could get any harder than they already were. He was wrong.
Let me tell you something, Skywalker, she said in a voice almost too soft for him to hear. I've wanted to kill you for a long time. I dreamed about your death every night for most of that first year. Dreamed it, plotted it. I must have run through 1,000 scenarios trying to find exactly the right way to do it. You can call it a cloud on my judgment if you want to. I'm used to it by now. It's the closest thing I've got to a permanent companion.
Luke looked back into those eyes, shaken right down to the core of his soul. What did I do to you? He whispered.
You destroyed my life, she said bitterly. It's only fair that I destroy yours.
Will killing me bring your old life back?
You know better than that, she said, her voice trembling slightly. But it's still something I have to do, for myself and for...
She broke off. What about Carda? Luke asked.
What about him?
I thought he still wanted me kept alive. She snorted.
We all want things we can't have.
But for just a second, there was something in her eyes. Something else that had flickered through the hatred. But whatever it wasn't enough.
I almost wish I could drag it out a little more, she said, glacially calm again as she lifted the blaster. But I don't have the time to spare.
Luke stared at the muzzle of her blaster, his mind frantically searching for inspiration.
Wait a minute, he said suddenly. You said you needed to find out what Carda had told the Imperials. What if I could get you a secure comm channel to him?
The muzzle of the blaster wavered.
How?
She asked suspiciously. Luke nodded toward her survival kit. Does the communicator in there have enough range to reach back to the base? I mean, without satellite boosting or anything? She was still looking suspicious.
There's a sonde balloon included that can take the antenna high enough to get past most of the forest damping. But it's non-directional, which means the Imperials and anyone else in this hemisphere will be able to listen in.
That's okay, Luke said. I can encrypt it so that no one else will be able to get anything out of it. Or rather, R2 can. Mara smiled thinly.
Wonderful, except for one minor detail. If the encrypt is that good, how is Carda supposed to decrypt it?
He won't have to, Luke told her. The computer in my X-Wing will do it for him. The thin smile vanished from Mara's face.
You're stalling, she snarled. You can't do a counterpart encrypt between an astromech droid and a ship computer.
Why not? R2 is the only droid who's worked with that computer in more than 5 years, with close to 3,000 hours of flight time. He's bound to have molded it to his own personality by now. In fact, I know he has. The ground maintenance people have to run diagnostics through him to make any sense out of them.
I thought standard procedure was to wipe and reload droid memories every 6 months to keep that from happening.
I like R2 the way he is, Luke said. And he and the X-Wing work better together this way.
How much better?
Luke searched his memory. Maintenance had run that test just a few months ago. I don't remember the exact number. It was something like 30% faster than a baseline Astromech X-Wing interface. Maybe 35. Mara was staring hard at R2.
That's counterpart level speed, all right, she agreed reluctantly. The Imperials could still crack it, though.
Eventually. But it would take some specialized equipment to do it. And you said yourself we'd be out of here in 3 days. For a long minute she stared at him, her jaw tight with clenched teeth, her face a mirror of fiercely battling emotions. Bitterness, hatred, desire for survival, and something else. Something that Luke could almost believe might be a touch of loyalty.
Your ship's sitting all alone out in the forest, she growled at last. How are you going to get the message back to Carda?
Someone's bound to check on the ship eventually, he pointed out. All we have to do is dump the message into storage and leave some kind of signal flashing that it's there. You have people who know how to pull a dump, don't you?
Any idiot knows how to pull a dump,
Mara glared at him.
Funny, isn't it, how this scheme just happens to require that I keep both of you alive a while longer.
Luke remained silent, meeting that bitter gaze without flinching. And then, abruptly, Mara's internal battle seemed to end.
What about the droid? She demanded. It'll take forever to get it across this terrain.
R2's made it through forest before. However, Luke looked around, spotted a tree with two low branches just the right size. I should be able to rig up a dragging frame to carry him on, a travois or something like that. He started to get up. If you'll give me my lightsaber for a minute, I can cut a couple of those branches off.
Sit down, she ordered, standing up. I'll do it.
Well, it had been worth a try. Those two, he told her, pointing. Be careful. Lightsabers are tricky to handle.
Your concern for my welfare is touching, she said, her voice dripping sarcasm.
She drew the lightsaber and stepped over to the indicated tree, keeping an eye on Luke the whole time. She raised the weapon, ignited it, and in a handful of quick, sure swipes, trimmed, shortened, and cut the branches from the tree. She closed down the weapon and returned it to her belt in a single, smooth motion.
Help yourself, she said, moving away.
Right, Luke said mechanically, his mind tingling with astonishment as he stumbled over to collect the branches. The way she'd done that. You've used a lightsaber before. She gazed at him coldly.
Just so you know I can handle it, in case you should feel tempted to try and make a grab for my blaster.
She glanced upward at the darkening sky.
Come on, get busy with that travois. We'll need to find some kind of clearing to put the sun balloon up, and I want to get that done before nightfall.
Chapter 24. I must apologize for chasing you out like that, Carda said as he walked hand toward the central building, particularly in the middle of a meal. Not exactly the sort of hospitality we strive for here. No problem, Han told him, eyeing him as best he could in the gathering dusk. The light from the building ahead was casting a faint glow on Carda's face. With luck, it would be enough to read the other's expression by.
What was that all about, anyway?
Nothing serious, Carter assured him easily. Some people with whom I've had business dealings wanted to come and look the place over.
Ah, Han said. So you're working directly for the Empire now.
Carter's expression cracked, just a little. Han expected him to make some sort of reflexive denial. Instead, he stopped and turned to look at Lando and Gint walking behind them.
Gint? He asked mildly.
I'm sorry, sir, the kid said, sounding miserable. They insisted on coming out to see what was happening.
I see. Carter looked back at Han, his face calm again. No harm done, probably. Not the wisest of risks to take, though.
I'm used to taking risks, Han told him. You haven't answered my question.
Carter resumed walking. If I'm not interested in working for the Republic, I'm certainly not interested in working for the Empire. The Imperials have been coming here for the past few weeks to collect Isalimiri, sessile creatures, like the ones hanging onto the tree in the Great Room. I offered my assistance in helping them safely remove the Isalimiri from their trees.
What did you get in return?
The privilege of watching them work, Carter said, giving me that much extra information to try to figure out what they wanted with the things.
And what did they want with them?
Carter glanced at Han. Information costs money here, Solo. Actually, to be perfectly honest, we don't know what they're up to. We're working on it, though.
I see. But you do know their commander personally.
Carter smiled faintly. That's information again. Han was starting to get sick of this.
Have it your way. What'll this Grand Admiral's name cost me?
For the moment, the name's not for sale, he told Han. Perhaps we'll talk about it later.
Thanks, but I don't think there's going to be a later, Han growled, stopping. If you don't mind, we'll just say our goodbyes here and get back to the ship.
Carter turned to him in mild surprise. You're not going to finish our dinner? You hardly had a chance to get started.
Han looked him straight in the eye. I don't especially like sitting on the ground like a practice target when there are stormtroopers wandering around, he said bluntly.
Carter's face hardened. At the moment, sitting on the ground is preferable to drawing attention in the air, he said coldly. The Star Destroyer hasn't left orbit yet. Lifting off now would be an open invitation for them to swat you down.
The Falcons outrun Star Destroyers before, Han countered.
But Carter had a point, and the fact that he hadn't turned the two of them over to the Imperials probably meant that he could be trusted, at least for now.
Probably.
On the other hand, if they did stay...
But I suppose it wouldn't hurt us to stick around a little longer, he conceded.
All right, sure. We'll finish dinner.
Good, Carter said. It will just take a few minutes to get things put back together.
You took everything apart? Lando asked.
Everything that might have indicated we had guests, Carter said. The Grand Admiral is highly observant, and I wouldn't have put it past him to know exactly how many of my associates are staying here at the moment.
Well, while you're getting things ready, Han said, I want to go back to the ship and check on a couple of things.
Carter's eyes narrowed slightly.
But you will be back.
Han gave him an innocent smile.
Trust me.
Carter gazed at him a moment longer, then shrugged.
Very well. Watch yourselves, though. The local predators don't normally come this close into our encampment, but there are exceptions.
We'll be careful, Han promised.
Come on, Lando. They headed back the way they'd come.
So what did we forget to do back at the Falcon? Lando asked quietly as they reached the trees.
Nothing, Han murmured back. I just thought it'd be a good time to go check out Carda's storage sheds, particularly the one that was supposed to have a prisoner in it.
They went about 5 meters into the forest, then changed direction to circle the compound. A quarter of the way around the circle, they found a likely-looking group of small buildings.
Look for a door with a lock, Lando suggested as they came out among the sheds. Either permanent or temporary.
Right.
Han peered through the darkness. That one over there, the one with two doors?
Could be, Lando agreed. Let's take a look.
The leftmost of the two doors did indeed have a lock. Or rather, it had had a lock.
It's been shot off, Lando said, poking at it with a finger. Strange.
Maybe the prisoner had friends, Han suggested, glancing around. There was no one else in sight. Let's go inside. They slid the door open and went in, closing it behind them before turning on the light. The shed was less than half full, with most of the boxes piled against the right-hand wall. The exceptions to that rule...
Han stepped over for a closer look.
Well, well, he murmured, gazing at the removed power outlet plate and the wires poking through the gap. Someone's been busy over here.
Someone's been even busier over here, Lando commented from behind him. Come have a look.
Lando was crouched down beside the door, peering into the inside of the door lock mechanism. Like the outside, half of its covering plate had been blasted off.
That must have been one beaut of a shot, Han frowned, coming over. It wasn't a single shot, Lando said, shaking his head. The stuff in between is mostly intact.
He pushed back the cover a little, poking at the electronics inside with his fingers.
Looks like our mysterious prisoner was tampering with the equipment.
I wonder how he got it open.
Han glanced back at the removed power plate.
I'm going to take a look next door, he told Lando, stepping back to the entrance and tapping the release.
The door didn't open.
Uh-oh, he muttered, trying again.
Wait a second, I see the problem, Lando said, fiddling with something behind the plate.
There's a power supply been half-spliced into the works.
Abruptly, the door slid open.
Back in a second, Han told him, and slipped outside.
The shed's right-hand room wasn't much different from the other one, except for one thing. In the center, in a space that had very obviously been cleared for the purpose, lay an open droid restraint collar.
Han frowned down at it.
The collar hadn't been properly put away, or even closed again. Hardly the way someone in an organization like Carda's would be expected to take care of company equipment. Roughly in the center of the collar's open jaws were three faint marks on the floor. Skid marks, he decided, formed by the restrained droid's attempts to move or get free. Behind him, the door whispered open.
Han spun around, blaster in hand. You seem to have gotten lost, Carda said calmly.
His eyes flicked around the room.
And to have lost General Calrissian along the way.
Han lowered the blaster.
You need to tell your people to put their toys away when they're done, he said, nodding his head at the abandoned restraint collar. You were holding a droid prisoner, too?
Carda smiled thinly.
I see Ghent was talking out of turn again. Amazing, isn't it, how so many expert slicers know everything about computers and droids, and yet don't know when to keep their mouths shut. It's also amazing how so many expert smugglers don't know when to leave a messy deal alone, Han shot back.
So what's your Grand Admiral got you doing? Formal slaving or just random kidnappings?
Carda's eyes flashed.
I don't deal in slaves, Solo. Slaves or kidnapping. Never.
What was this one then? An accident?
I didn't ask for him to come into my life, Carda countered, nor did I especially want him there.
Han snorted.
You're stretching, Carda. What'd he do, drop in out of the sky on top of you?
As a matter of fact, that's very nearly the way it happened, Carda said stiffly.
Oh, well, that's a good reason to lock someone up, Han said sardonically. Who was he?
That information's not for sale.
Maybe we don't need to buy it, Lando said from behind him.
Carda turned.
Ah, he said, as Lando stepped past him into the room. There you are, exploring the other half of the shed, were you?
Yeah, we don't stay lost very long, Han assured him.
What'd you find, Lando?
This.
Lando held up a tiny red cylinder with a pair of wires coming out of each end.
It's a Micrel power supply, the kind used for low-draw applications. Our prisoner wired it into the door lock control after the power lines had been burned away. That's how he got out.
He moved it a little closer.
The manufacturer's logo is small but readable. Recognize it?
Han squinted at it. The script was alien, but it seemed vaguely familiar.
I've seen it before, but I don't remember where.
You saw it during the war, Lando told him, his gaze steady on Carda. It's the logo of the Siba Habadit.
Han stared at the tiny cylinder, a strange chill running through him. The Siba Habadit had been one of the Alliance's major suppliers of Micrel equipment, and their specialty had been...
That's a bioelectronic power supply?
That's right, Lando said grimly. Just like the kind that would have been put in, say, an artificial hand.
Slowly, the muzzle of Han's blaster came up again to point at Carda's stomach.
There was a droid in here, he told Lando. The skid marks on the floor look just about right for an R2 unit.
He raised his eyebrows.
Feel free to join the conversation any time, Carda.
Carda sighed, his face a mixture of annoyance and resignation.
What do you want me to say? That Luke Skywalker was a prisoner here?
All right, consider it said.
Han felt his jaw tighten. And he and Lando had been right here, blissfully unaware.
Where is he now? He demanded.
I thought Ghent would have told you, Carda said darkly. He escaped in one of my skip-ray blast boats.
His lips twisted, crashing it in the process.
He what? He's all right, Carda assured him. Or at least he was a couple of hours ago. The stormtroopers who went to investigate said that both wrecks were deserted.
His eyes seemed to flatten just for a minute.
I hope that means they're working together to make their way out.
You don't sound sure of that, Han prompted.
The eyes flattened a little more.
Mara Jade was the one who went after him. She has a certain... Well, why mince words? In point of fact, she wants very much to kill him.
Han threw a startled glance at Lando.
Why?
Carda shook his head.
I don't know.
For a moment, the room was silent.
How did he get here? Lando asked.
As I said, purely by accident, Carda said. No, I take that back. It wasn't an accident for Mara.
she led us directly to his crippled starfighter.
How?
Again, I don't know. He fixed Han with a hard look. And before you ask, we had nothing to do with the damage to his ship. He'd burned out both hyperdrive motivators, tangling with one of the Empire's star destroyers. If we hadn't picked him up, he'd almost certainly be dead by now.
Instead of roaming a forest with someone who still wants him that way, Han countered.
Yeah, you're a real hero.
The hard look hardened even further. The Imperials want Skywalker, Solo. They want him very badly. If you look carefully, you'll notice that I didn't give him to them.
Because he escaped first.
He escaped because he was in this shed, Carter retorted. And he was in this shed because I didn't want the Imperials stumbling over him during their unannounced visit.
He paused.
You'll also notice, he added quietly, that I didn't turn the two of you over to them either.
Slowly, Han lowered the blaster. Anything said at the point of a gun was, of course, suspect. But the fact that Carda had indeed not betrayed them to the Imperials was a strong argument in his favor. Or rather, he hadn't betrayed them yet. That could always change.
I want to see Luke's X-Wing, he told Carda.
Certainly, Carda said. I'd recommend not going there until tomorrow morning, though. We moved it somewhat farther into the forest than your ship, and there will be predators roaming around it in the darkness.
Penn hesitated, then nodded. If Carda had something subtle going here, he almost certainly would have already erased or altered the X-Wing's computer log. A few more hours wouldn't make any difference.
All right. So what are we going to do about Luke?
Carter shook his head, his gaze not quite focused on Han. There's nothing we can do for them tonight, not with Vornskers roaming the forest and the Grand Admiral still in orbit. Tomorrow, we'll have to discuss it, see what we can come up with. His focus came back, and with it, a slightly ironic smile. In the meantime, dinner should be ready by now, if you'll follow me.
The dimly lit holographic art gallery had changed again, this time to a collection of remarkably similar flame-shaped works that seemed to pulsate and alter in form as Pelion moved carefully between the pedestals. He studied them as he walked, wondering where this batch had come from.
Have you found them, Captain?
Thrawn asked as Pelion reached the double display circle. He braced himself.
I'm afraid not, sir. We'd hoped that with the arrival of local nightfall, we'd be able to get some results from the infrared sensors, but they don't seem able to penetrate the tree canopy either.
Thrawn nodded.
What about that pulse transmission we picked up just after sundown?
We were able to confirm that it originated from the approximate location of the crash site, Pelion told him. But it was too brief for a precise location check. The encrypt on it is a very strange one. Decrypt thinks it might be a type of counterpart coding. They're still working on it.
They've tried all the known rebellion encrypts, I presume?
Yes, sir, as per your orders.
Thrawn nodded thoughtfully.
It looks like we're at something of a stalemate then, Captain. At least as long as they are in the forest. Have you calculated their likely emergence points?
There's really only one practical choice, Pelion said, wondering why they were making so much of a fuss over this. A town called Hilliard City, on the edge of the forest, and almost directly along their path. It's the only population center anywhere for more than 100 kilometers. With only the one survival pack between them, they almost have to come out there.
Excellent, Thrawn nodded.
I want you to detail 3 squads of stormtroopers to set up an observation post there. They are to assemble and depart ship immediately.
Pelion blinked.
Stormtroopers, sir?
Stormtroopers, Thrawn repeated, turning his gaze to one of the flame sculptures.
Better add 1/2 a biker scout unit, too, and 3 chariot light assault vehicles.
Yes, sir, Pelion said cautiously.
Stormtroopers were in critically short supply these days. To waste them like this on something so utterly unimportant as a smuggler squabble.
Carda lied to us, you see, Thrawn continued, as if reading Pelion's mind. Whatever that little drama was this afternoon, it was not the common pursuit of a common thief. I'd like to know what, in fact, it was.
I don't think I follow, sir.
It's very simple, Captain, Thrawn said, in that tone of voice he always seemed to use when explaining the obvious. The pilot of the chase vehicle never reported in during the pursuit, nor did anyone from Carda's base communicate with him. We know that. We'd have intercepted any such transmissions. No progress reports, no assistance requests, nothing but complete radio silence.
He looked back at Pelion. Speculation, Captain?
Whatever it was, Pelion said slowly, it was something they didn't want us knowing about.
Beyond that, he shook his head. I don't know, sir. There could be any number of things they wouldn't want outsiders to know about. They are smugglers, after all.
Agreed. Thrawn's eyes seemed to glitter. But now, consider the additional fact that Carda refused our invitation to join in the search for Skywalker, and the fact that this afternoon he implied the search was over.
He raised an eyebrow.
What does that suggest to you, Captain?
Pelion felt his jaw drop. You mean that was Skywalker in that skip ray?
An interesting speculation, isn't it? Thrawn agreed. Unlikely, I'll admit, but likely enough to be worth following up on.
Yes, sir.
Pelion glanced at the chrono, did a quick calculation. Though if we stay here more than another day or two, we may have to move back the Sluice Van attack.
We are not moving Sluice Van, Thrawn said emphatically. Our entire victory campaign against the rebellion begins there, and I'll not have so complex and far-reaching a schedule altered. Not for Skywalker, not for anyone else.
He nodded at the flame statue surrounding them.
Sluicy art clearly indicates a biannual cyclic pattern, and I want to hit them at their most sluggish point. We'll leave for our rendezvous with the inexorable and the cloaking shield test as soon as the troops and vehicles have been dropped. 3 squads of stormtroopers should be adequate to handle Skywalker, if he is indeed here.
His eyes bored into Pelion's face.
And to handle Carda, he added softly, if he turns out to be a traitor.
The last bits of dark blue had faded from the tiny gaps in the canopy overhead, leaving nothing but blackness above them. Turning the survival kit's work light to its lowest setting, Mara set it down and sank gratefully to the ground against a large tree bole. Her right ankle, twisted somehow in the skip ray crash, had started to ache again, and it felt good to get the weight off it. Skywalker was already stretched out a couple of meters on the other side of the worklight, his head pillowed on his tunic, his loyal droid standing at his side. She wondered if he'd guessed about the ankle, dismissed the question as irrelevant. She'd had worse injuries without being slowed down by them.
Reminds me of Endor, Skywalker said quietly, as Mara arranged her glow rod and blaster in her lap where they'd be accessible. A forest always sounds so busy at night.
Oh, it's busy, all right, Mara grunted. A lot of the animals here are nocturnal, including the Vornskers.
Strange, he murmured. Karda's pet Vornskers seemed wide enough awake in late afternoon. She looked across at him, mildly surprised he'd noticed that.
Actually, even in the wild they take small naps around the clock, she said. I call them nocturnal because they do most of their hunting at night.
Skywalker mulled that over for a moment. Maybe we ought to travel at night then, he suggested. They'll be hunting us either way. At least then we'd be awake and alert while they were on the prowl. Mara shook her head.
It'd be more trouble than it's worth. We need to be able to see the terrain as far ahead of us as possible if we're going to avoid running into dead ends. Besides, this whole forest is dotted with small clearings,
through which a glow rod beam would show very clearly to an orbiting ship, he conceded. Point. You seem to know a lot about this place.
It wouldn't take more than an observant pilot flying over the forest to see that, she growled.
But he was right, she knew, as she eased back against the rough bark. Know your territory was the first rule that had been drilled into her, and the first thing she'd done after establishing herself in Karda's organization had been to do precisely that. She'd studied the aerial maps of the forest and surrounding territory, had taken long walks in both daylight and at night to familiarize herself with the sights and sounds, had sought out and killed several Vornskers and other predators to learn the fastest ways of taking them down, had even talked one of Karda's people into running bio tests on a crate load of native plants to find out which were edible and which weren't. Outside the forest, she knew something about the settlers, understood the local politics, and had stashed a small but adequate part of her earnings out where she could get hold of it. More than anyone else in Karda's organization, she was equipped to survive outside the confines of his encampment. So why was she trying so hard to get back there? It wasn't for Karda's sake, that much she was sure of. All that he'd done for her, her job, her position, her promotions, she'd more than repaid with hard work and good service. She didn't owe him anything, any more than he owed her. Whatever the story was he'd concocted this afternoon to explain the skip-ray chase to Thrawn, it would have been designed to protect his own neck, not hers. This book is continued on cassette number 9, side 1.